for members only. Golf Smarter number 461, published on November 4, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Part 2 on Mastering Golf's Mental Game with author Dr. Michael T. Lardon.
This is Golf Smarter.
There are so many distractions on the tour that go along with that level of competition, you know, from the corporate outings. But then you've got just the travel alone and the food and the people who want your time and the women who want to go to your room. And there's just so many different things that can be distractions. How is it possible that these guys are able to eliminate those thoughts once they step up to the tee box? And how can we get a shred of that to distract what's going on in our lives, which, you know, it's great if we can get time to go out to the golf course because there are so many distractions and we don't get time to practice. We just want to go out and play because there's so many things in our way. How are we able to do that? How can we get rid of all that?
Well, there are kind of two questions in there, but to talk about us, the regular golfer, I suggest for people to say, hey, you know, you have a very busy work life. I know for me, I'm a physician. And when I go to golf, I look at it as my sanctuary. And that's what I encourage people. Let's turn off the darn cell phone. You know, let's look at the beauty of the golf course. And for a few hours, you know, let's really honor this experience. I think for a lot of average golfers, that's very, very refreshing. Now, they don't have all the distractions of the tour player. Now, taking a look at the tour player, I can remember one of the guys I've worked with. I won't mention his name, but it was in the final group on Sunday at Riviera at the Los Angeles Open. And on Saturday night, I met him, and he's on his third cocktail. And, you know, we have to go through the metabolism of alcohol, and that's not really a very good thing because you're going to have some alcohol, you know, when you tee off tomorrow in your blood. So needless to say, that particular golfer, he really struggled. And, you know, autographs and let me get you another drink. Now, we take other golfers, you know, that have been very successful. You know, you don't see Steve Stricker doing that too much. You don't see Jim Furyk. You certainly didn't see Tiger. So I think, you know, many of them have this.
Tiger was seen. He was seen at a lot of bars and places, but he may not have been drinking, but he was.
Yeah, well,
flirting.
We won't go there too much, but on Saturday night, I would say he's very, very disciplined.
Okay.
I can tell you a great Tiger story about Matt Gogel. They were playing in Florida, and Matt went off the back nine and Tiger the front. And long story short, it was an arduous day. And at the end of the day, and Matt had to do a lot of local media. Tiger did all the international media. And at the end of the day, Matt meets his wife at the bar having a beer, and he's so exhausted. And his wife is all bright-eyed, and he says, "Whoa, you look in great spirits. Where were you?" And she said, "Well, I just came back from the gym." And he goes, "Oh, okay, what was that like?" And he goes, "Well, next to me for 45 minutes, Tiger was running sprints." And Matt just shook his head because Tiger had just had the same 8 hours prior as Matt did, which was, you know, playing in bad weather, on and off, super tired. And the difference is Matt, like most guys, you know, wanted to go relax a little bit. And, you know, Tiger goes to the gym. So I don't think in any way Tiger's work ethic is ever questioned. And I don't really know him to compromise, you know, himself right before something very important. Now, outside of the golf world and what he does in other domains is really beyond the scope of this conversation, Fred.
Yeah. Okay, I'll buy into that. I mean, I'm fascinated. You mentioned a lot of players, and Tiger is just he's one name. That makes sense. But of the other players you mentioned, Phil. Tell me about your relationship with Phil. And we're talking about Mickelson, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's funny because, you know, about 8 years ago, I was helping Tim Mickelson as a coach for the USD golf team here. Now Tim's in Arizona.
And that's Phil's brother.
Yeah, Tim Mickelson, sure. And I used to play a lot of table tennis when I was young. I played competitively and Japan and Europe. And long story short, Phil likes table tennis, and a lot of the tour players love table tennis. They actually flying a ping pong table to the President's Cup. And Tim had said to me, "Hey, Doc, you know, my brother, Christmas is coming up, and you know, I want to get my brother something good, but he has everything, and everything he doesn't have that he wants, he just buys. But he loves table tennis, and he thinks his serve is really good, and he can beat me, but I know he's not that good. So would you come and play with him, you know, give him a lesson, and that would be his Christmas present?" So I said, sure. And then needless to say, a month or so later, I was actually helping Nate Kading with the Chargers, and I was going down to the stadium. I got a call to meet Phil, and it was very funny. I was in blue jeans, and I started to think, well, maybe he's a really good player. I mean, he's number five in the world in golf. And then I pulled up to the gate at the Bridges, and before I said anything, the gate man said, "Are you here for? Are you Dr. Larden? Are you here for the match?" And I go, "Ooh, match." Now I was getting scared. And then they brought me into a private gym, and it's like a little basketball court. They had the stands, and somebody greeted me. And then the next thing I know, Phil came with a little entourage of folks, many of which work for Callaway or TaylorMade. Their factories are near here. And the next thing you know, he and I are playing table tennis, and he gives the serve, and needless to say, the serve, if you're a professional table tennis player, is an easy serve to, you know, loop kill. And I did that, and Phil said, "Wow." And then I serve some, and when we serve, we throw the ball up high. It's called a high toss. Mm-hmm. And the ball comes out, you know, pretty fast, 50 miles an hour with a big curve, and kind of curved around Phil's racket. And he said, "Wow, if you can teach me that, I'll teach you the short game." And I laughed and said, "It's too late for me. Maybe you could help my brother." And then I started playing him in a chair and giving him 9 points to 11, playing in a chair, teaching him footwork, in fact. And we had that interaction, and that was quite fun. And then right before the Houston Open in 2011, he engaged me to help him with golf. And we had a really good session, and that's where the mental scorecard was named that day at the Bridges. And then he won that week in the Houston Open. So that's where it started. And it's been very fun to work with Phil. He's very bright and curious and soaks up information, and his talent is, you know, legendary. So we've had a nice relationship.
And in the book, you talk about mindset of growth versus fixed. And Phil fit into that very well versus a lot of other players. Can we cover that for just a moment? Because I thought that was really fascinating. I found myself on the growth side.
Right. Well, that's good, Fred. That's good. That's where we want to be. And I think an important thing is if you have a fixed mindset, you can actually learn to transform it into a growth mindset. And whether we're talking about sport or golf, as we are now, or really in life, the concepts are very important. So, example, if you kind of want to use Phil loves when Tiger plays. So rather than being threatened, and if we think back to Tiger's heyday, there used to be the Tiger effect. There was a great article in Sports Illustrated, and that showed, and this was some years back before 2008, that when he played, the rest of the field actually shot like almost a shot worse. And what does that tell us? That tells us cumulatively the rest of the field, you know, was intimidated by Tiger and didn't play as well. In contrast, Phil and many other great players, they are inspired when Tiger's out there. And actually, Phil has a very favorable head-to-head record against Tiger. It gets him pumped up. You know, he wants that. A little like Federer and Nadal and Djokovic in tennis.
Yeah.
They have a wonderful growth mindset, those guys. So it's a really important concept.
Absolutely fascinating. You're kind of downplaying your level of achievement in table tennis. Let's give us a background on that and how you found yourself in the zone, and now that you're able to give it to all of us.
To make a long story short, when I was young, I got involved. The Chinese table tennis team came to Madison Square Garden in 1972. Nixon and table tennis diplomacy, and those that are our age or my age at least might remember that. But fast forward, I got involved. It was the second, it is the second largest sport in the world participation at the Olympics in China. It was actually watched more than the finals of the soccer, if you can believe. But neither here nor there. I ended up being trained in Japan by the world champion over there. And I came home and I was in the finals of the United States Junior Championships. And it was a 3 out of 5. And when we started, I was in the zone where the ball that moves at 90 miles an hour started to come in slow motion. I could see it as big as an egg. And I won the first couple of games handily. And then at the break, where you go to the other side of the table, one of the coaches had said, and the winner was going to get their name on all these table tennis rackets distributed in Herman's sporting goods stores. I don't know if they have them anymore, but kind of like Golfsmith, a big change. So it was a big deal. And the coach said something like, oh, this will be an amazing upset. I think I was seated 12th, and I was playing the perennial best player, multiple national champion. And the next thing you know, I thought, wow, I'm going to have my name on all these rackets. I'll be the national champion. As soon as that happened, I lost the next three, and the rest is history. It spawned my career as a sport psychology doctor.
But you said that table tennis was the second world's most popular participation sport. I've got three or four in my head that could be first. What's first?
Soccer.
That's what I thought.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and actually there's some data now that table tennis may even rival it. But
really?
Yeah, Matt Rudy, the Golf Digest writer who helped me with my book, he researched to find table tennis number one. But I'm not 100% sure, so I say number two. But when I was young, I played in the German professional league. I lived in Sweden. The Swedes are great players. They beat the Chinese and have won the worlds a couple of times. So outside of America, it's a lot more than you think. In fact, Freddie Jacobsen, who is the Swedish golfer, when he comes to Torrey Pines, he and I always have these great matches and we have a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's so cool. So let's talk about the scorecard and a little more to wrap this up and making it a motivation to purchase the book, which we will have available in our Golfer's Mart in our book section, along with your first book as well. We'll have them both. But I'm curious, when you say number of shots that qualify in the mental scorecard system, what do you mean by that qualify?
Well, if in that shot you took the second or two or 5 seconds to figure out, I'm really going to hit a 7-iron and you're not ambivalent, you make your best choice, you have met the first criteria of the shot. The next criteria is, you know, to make sure you sort of feel the shot, you know, how's it going to feel if you putt, right? You know how when we putt, we kind of walk halfway and this is the feel of it. That's the feeling part. And then you get in and hit it. And it's that simple. And if you do those three things, regardless of the result, because we're only concerned with everything that happens before the ball leaves the club face, because after it leaves the club face, there's not a lot we can do. But if you do those three things, that shot's a 1-for-1. Now, if you don't do all of those three things, you do not get the point, and it's a 0-for-1. And again, that's independent of the result. So you got 100 shots, you know, only 50 of them did you do it. The other 50, you were smoking cigars, chatting. If you apply this very simple concept, it's hard not to, you know, increase your percentage to 60 or even more maybe. And that really will have a huge impact in the average golfer. You know, the tour players, the margins are so thin. But for the average guy, we just have an email that came in, and we're going to get it posted on Amazon. And the guy thanked me, said, I'm a 12 handicapper, and I went out, and I shot 73, my lowest round ever. And I didn't even know I shot 73 because I was focusing on, you know, your pre-shot pyramid. But my mental scorecard was, what, 80% or something, he said. So that's a great case in point. And we do give real examples. There's one in the book of a web.com player, Scott Fawcett, who went from a club player to making the web.com and almost a full tour card. you know, and he was one of these guys that is into statistics. And when we started, he went from 60% to 90%. And sure enough, his level of play, you know, was dramatically better. So to give you just a little, that's the application piece, and the that's part two. And I think that in and of itself would have a tremendous impact on the average golfer.
I recently played with a friend of a friend. I went out with a friend of mine. He brought a friend with him, and his friend is a three or a four. I mean, excellent golfer. And afterwards, he said to me, well, you know, you're a pretty good player. You know, you didn't have your intention wasn't there for every shot. And that kind of like, what? Wow. And that really had an impact on the way I approach each shot now. I was kind of taken aback by that, but I loved it.
Well, it's probably a great observation. And I think of like the tour players, they're great at hitting really hard shots because they really concentrate. And I mean, I think of my work with Rich Beem over a decade or so. Give him a really hard shot and, you know, he was impressive. The ones that I worried more about for him was, you know, a nine iron with an, you know, just an easy pin at 130 yards, because sometimes the easy shot, it's easy to space out. And at tour level, all you need is one bad shot and you can miss a cut. So I think that happens a lot, you know, with average guys. It's more than one shot. It's more than the nine iron. And even good players, even three or four handicappers. So it teaches us, just like we want to make a good swing, we want to have a good mental framework for each shot when we play. Now, what we do between the shots, we talk about it in the book. You relax your attention. You know, you can't grind and concentrate for 5 hours straight. That's suboptimal. So you pulse your concentration. And Jack Nicklaus would talk about concentration with the metaphor of an accordion. So the accordion squeezes in as you do your pre-shot and hit the ball. And then once the ball's left your club face, you relax and, you know, feel the grass, look at the trees. And as that next ball comes towards you, we start to get our attentional focus. We do our calculations, our left brain, our right brain, until we hit the ball shot again, and then we relax again. So concentration is something that, you know, you have to know how to work with. And if you don't, and mind's a muscle, so you have to practice it to get better, and you have to have good habits. And I think the book really helps, you know, teach people these good mental habits.
And on the top of the pre-shot pyramid, two words here and one inside of the other, the no mind.
Well, that is
I love this.
Yeah, that's a triple entendre.
Okay.
And so no is spelled K-N-O-W, which is really to know knowledge.
Correct.
So if you have the knowledge, you use no mind. In no mind, you just look at the N-O in there. Which is we don't want to be thinking when we're hitting the ball. We want to hit with no mind. We want to hit with instinct if we can. Now, we say that if you can't get that bad thought out of your head, you can use an anchor thought. An example, Billy Casper used to talk about just finish high. Now, that's a non-technical thought. When you're a golfer, finish high doesn't really take, you know, any of the mental energy reserve. But what it does is it keeps you from thinking about the water. Now, we're in the zone. We just hit it. We don't even think at all. But sometimes we're in a tough situation and we need an anchor thought. So but the ideal state is not to be thinking. That's no mind. And then buried in the K-N-O-W is the word now. And you want to be in the present. You want to be the power of now. So you want to have knowledge. You don't want to be thinking when you're hitting it. And that's the not. It's there's an old saying, those who know do not think, and those who think do not know. So that's how we stay immersed in the present, and that is the top of the pyramid. You know, just hit it. Don't get too cerebral.
Awesome. Again, the book is called Mastering Golf's Mental Game, Your Ultimate Guide to Better On-Course Performance and Lower Scores by the Table Tennis Wizard. He's a ping-pong wizard. Must be. We're going to rewrite the words to that song for you, right? Dr. Michael T. Larden. Mike, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I really appreciate it. And best of luck. I'm sure you're going to be selling a couple copies to the Golf Smarter community.
Great. And Fred, thanks very much. I love your podcast. And as always, it's great chatting with you.
Again, Michael's book is called Mastering Golf's Mental Game, Your Ultimate Guide to Better On-Course Performance and Lower Scores. It's available via Amazon as a hardback, a Kindle version, even as an audiobook download or an audio CD. And they're all available in the book section of Our Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. Please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.